This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get going with some headlines. Well, Mariners 1-0. They'll come back and play right after the show today. 1:10 will be first pitch. 12 will be the pregame show. But bad news, Mike Zunino has a lat injury, and so he's or oblique injury, so he's going to be on the disabled list. David Freitas was called up from the minors to replace him. So, again, yet another injury. It looked minor when it was there in the pregame. They thought it was just going to be, let's sit him out and he's going to be fine. But now he's going to need a little bit more time to be able to at least bounce back. And it's a shame because he had such a great spring training. He had such a great end the last year, and he's really evolving into one of the better catchers in the game. So a setback for the Mariners, but they go again today at 1 o'clock. It'll be James Paxton on the mound going against the Cleveland Indians, and of course pregame right after this show. Thomas Rawls ends up getting a deal with the New York Jets, former Seahawk running back that did not give the tender offer as a restricted free agent. I'm sure it's a deal probably worth about $700,000, maybe a little bit more than that, but he goes to the Jets. Seahawks looking at Geno Smith at quarterback. Some people think that they'll maybe consider Mark Sanchez. They need a backup quarterback because Trevon Boykin was released for the team after being at least accused of a very violent aggravated assault, and so he's no longer in the mix for the Seahawks, and they definitely need a backup quarterback. They're also looking at cornerbacks, trying to see if they can get Byron Maxwell back, and also trying to see if they can't get him back, what other cornerback to add to the mix. NCAA tournament coming up today. Loyola Marymount going against Michigan. The big number ones going at it. Kansas Villanova. Big day on Saturday here, and of course they all advance. And then Connecticut at the last second upset in the women's tournament in the semifinals with a big buzzer shot in that with 1 second left. And so Notre Dame advances and Connecticut's down. Those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. And joining us right now is Dave Grosby. And Dave, how are you on this fine Easter Saturday?
John, doing very well. How are you, buddy?
Doing well. Looking forward to the sunshine and all the funs, and of course, kind of a nice, kind of quiet type weekend, even though, again, more bad news for the Mariners with injuries, and it just doesn't stop. I mean, you know, you found out in the pregame that Zunino was going to be a one-day scratch. Now it turns into a 10-plus-day oblique injury. That can't be considered to be good.
No. I mean, under no circumstances can that be considered to be good, and you know, I don't know how much they brought it. They made a big hullabaloo about bringing in this new doctor and having this new approach to injuries that was going to fix them from last year. And look, you can't do everything. I mean, you can't prevent a guy from getting hit by a line drive, for that matter. But the sprains, strains, things like that, you know, those are the sorts of things that if you embark on a new health program or a new stretching technique or whatever they are doing, and I'm not sure exactly what they're doing, and you're not getting results. I mean, you can see it obviously, and this kind of falls in that category a little bit. And they've had a few of these. I mean, Ben Gamel is dealing with this. No, I agree with you on Zunino, who feels like at age 25 he's on the cusp of becoming a gray one. Now he's got an injury. It put him on just a 10-day DL, but this is the sort of thing that can linger, that can last a lot longer than just 10 days. And it's not a position where they have a lot of depth. Mike Marjoram had a tremendous memorable debut, but you know, this is really his first crack at the majors for the most part. He's been around for a little while, but it's a big hole in the lineup now, and not what they needed. You know, they were beginning to get that feeling. We had a conversation with pitching coach Mel Stottlemyre on the show on opening day, and you know, he talked about how at the first stages of the spring it did definitely have that deja vu feel of last year, and then in the last week, you know, people seem to get better, seem to be working out, and now this is just a slap in the face, kick in the gut, you know, nothing positive about it at all. So we'll see what happens on the field of play, of course. Game two at Safeco should be interesting to see James Paxton's debut, and the Indians sent out Carlos Carrasco as an 18-game winner the year before. So we'll see what happens, but no positive at all to the Zunino situation.
No, and it's, You know, it just doesn't stop. And again, you wonder, again, you know, you try something new and you know, you can't say it's not working, but it hasn't been successful and the injuries keep on mounting up. And when you're, you know, strains and things like that, I mean, you know, again, no criticism of the new system, but right now, no luck with the new system. But that's the way the Mariners are. Now, of course, the key, I mean, we watched last Saturday that, you know, Felix came off and was strong and did such a great thing in setting things up and then exceeded expectation in the opener. I mean, looking like a different Felix, but a very good Felix, which clearly was needed.
Well, yeah, and look, I mean, what Felix Hernandez had going in his situation was, you know, pretty clear to everyone that was watching. He had every pitch working. He had command of everything. And Felix was always, even in the glory days of his 95-mile-an-hour fastball, it was a 4 or 5 pitch pitcher who could, you know, his changeup was really even his ultimate out pitch. And, you know, had slider, had everything working. And when he had all that stuff working along with the fastball, he was virtually unhittable. Well, his fastball is only a 91 or 92 mile an hour pitch these days. So it's not the same thing. But if he's got control of his curveball, if he's got control of his breaking stuff, if he's got control of his slider, and in particular, if he's got control of his changeup, which has been his dominant pitch over the years, he's unhittable still. So that did not change. Now the question will be, what can he do? And this is not just him; it's every pitcher. Every pitcher has a time where his stuff just isn't working, and you know, he can't. You know, one of the elements is not working. And what we don't know is how effective Felix can be if, in fact, he doesn't have everything going. And that's the next test. But certainly it was a very great debut. And we do know that if he's got his pitches working, he is as dominant as he ever was. You know, 4 strikeouts in 5 innings, which is still, you know, I mean, on a pace for 8 for 9, which is not bad at all. But it was a great debut for Felix. And it's good to know that, you know, at his age, that he has shown that he can be a different kind of pitcher. The question will be, and that'll be the issue for everyone, is what will he do, again, when he doesn't have his best stuff? Will he revert to the guy that he was last year and try and work the corners a little bit, get too deep into counts? Because they need him, and they need Paxton, and they need Mike Leake, by the way, to be, you know, 6 to 7 inning pitchers for him this year to take some pressure off that bullpen when you can't guarantee that with the other guys. So great debut, but I'm curious to see what happens when he doesn't have his best stuff.
Mm-hmm. No question, and that's going to be the big challenge to see, you know, what can go. Expectations today for James Paxton.
Do that again, John?
What expectations do you have today for James Paxton?
Oh, sure. Look, James Paxton, if he's going to be your ace, your expectations are every time out, at the bare minimum, he gives you a chance to win. But you're looking for 7 innings. I mean, let's start right there. You're looking for a guy who's going to throw 7 innings and have you in the game, you know, not give up more than a run or two. If you're going to be the ace, that's where you got to be. So I don't see any reason not to have those expectations for James Paxton right out of the chute. Not to expect him to be, you know, that guy right away, and that's what you're looking for from him. We already know what he can do. I mean, really, the thing about James Paxton is there are no issues with his stuff. There's no issues with his command. There's no issues with how he pitches. None of that exists. The only issue he has is, can he make 35 starts or 34 starts? And he's never come close. He's gone up in previous years, and he had 25 last year, and he was 12-5 with an ERA under 3. But that's the only issue with him. That's it. You know, he's not a youngster anymore. He's not a 23-year-old, a 24-year-old. He's 29 years old. He should be at the very peak of his powers. There's no reason to believe that he's not the same pitcher that he was last year. So, James Paxton, it's kind of weird. I mean, you have the expectation that his stuff will always be good. The only question you have is, can he stay healthy? And that's something that'll be determined throughout the course of the year. So, I would expect, I have no reason to think otherwise, even against a lineup like the Indians, which is power-packed and one of the best in the American League, that they'll be dominant today. And then from the specific in-game standpoint, I think every time that Paxton pitches, the Mariners are looking for 7 innings.
Yeah, no question. And that's, and of course, you know, I guess really, I mean, clearly Felix and Paxton are the two keys, but also the bonus is going to be Marco Gonzalez, because if Marco Gonzalez, you know, comes out and pitches like he did in the spring and can be pitching like a number one, even though now he's a number three, I mean, that's what could put this team over the top. But again, with the questions that might be there, can Felix go more than 23 starts? Can Paxton get to the 30, 31 start level? I mean, those questions still remain, but the bonus is Marco Gonzalez being the one that could really shape things up.
Well, you look at any team that has a successful year, I mean, if it's not predicted to be successful, you've got four or five guys who have their career years, who exceed the numbers in their baseball cards. And you're correct in identifying Gonzalez as one of those guys. I mean, you know, the Cardinals gave up on him. They drafted him really high. He had some injury issues. He was off Tommy John surgery a year before, which doesn't necessarily hurt guys moving forward. In fact, we've seen guys go with greater velocity. Right now, I mean, what are their expectations for him? What has he shown in the past? He hasn't shown anything. So almost anything you get from him is a bonus. If he shows, just like you said, if he shows number one, you know, I mean, his potential is as a number one starter. So if he's the guy who comes up with 12 to 14 wins, you know, that takes a lot of the pressure off the Felixes and the James Paxtons, because it's something you're not counting on. You need four or five guys to exceed expectations, and I would say, considering that the Mariners' lineup is as robust as it is, their bullpen is as deep as it is, they need that from their starters. You know, Mike Leake is probably the number three, John, because his consistency over the years in throwing 200 innings, which is an important thing for this pitching staff. But, yeah, Gonzalez is, I would agree with you, is a linchpin. If he has a productive year and then has double-digit wins and exceeds expectations, odds are the Mariners are going to be in contention all season long.
No question. Thoughts on the NCAA tournament today, because I know it's a big day for you.
Sure is. We're down at the Quinault Beach Resort Casino, by the way. They're having a viewing party for it starting at 3 o'clock. You know, Loyola, Cinderella starting up against Michigan. The question for them is, how will they handle the trappings of the big time? Not that it hasn't been big time so far in winning you know, the four tournament games to get here, but it's different at the Final Four. It's different. You know, there are just a few. You're not in an arena anymore. You're in a stadium. There are 20, 30,000 people watching you practice. There are all these big-time X factors that you know, that kind of existed on the way up, but you had a lot of the teams with you, and you're still shooting in arenas and things like that. The other schools, all big schools, all major schools, you know, Michigan is a great story, and I think they've got the most underrated coach in the country in John Beilein, who remade his team. I mean, Michigan, with about 12 games to go in the season, lost by 20 points to a very ordinary Nebraska team. Didn't look like they were going anywhere, had trouble shooting, and John Beilein remade them on the fly into a defensive powerhouse that rolled through the Big Ten the rest of the way, rolled through the Big Ten tournament, and, you know, has been very, very impressive. Now, Michigan had what every team has in this tournament to get to the Final Four. You have to have a game where serendipity exists, where you know, and they had the miracle shot of the tournament. Loyola's first three games, they won by a total of 4 points, for crying out loud. You know, Villanova, Kansas have also been challenged in specific games. So, you know, it's I've said to you all week long that this reminds me so much of the mid-80s Final Four that featured North Carolina State in one of the greatest upsets of all time, you know, knocking off Georgia in the Final Four. And everyone's attention was on the two number ones battling in the other game, which was Houston and Louisville. And Houston beat Louisville and played one of the greatest games I've seen a team play in college basketball. Looked like they were just the awesome powerhouse. And then at the end of the day, got beat by an NC State team that got hot. And I think the thing about Loyola is, you know, that's the only question is, can they handle the trappings? You know, they had a stretch during the middle of the season where they had a couple of key guys hurt. And they went like 3-4 during that stretch. Otherwise, this is a team that would have won 35 games this year, would have cruised the Missouri Valley Conference, would have been a higher seed. So, you know, they were probably overseeded at 11. They were probably much more like an 8 or a 7. And if guys have been healthy, that's what they would have been. Missouri Valley Conference has produced good teams. Wichita State in particular jumps out. It's not quite a major conference, a little bit more than mid-major. They've got a real puncher's chance. And they, the one thing they will have going for them, you know, even though it's a big stadium that they're playing in and everything, is the crowd will be with them. I mean, Michigan is even though they're a 3 seed and not a favorite, you know, going into the tournament, they're Goliath in this circumstance. So Loyola will have the crowd with them. And, you know, the key for them, in my opinion, in this game is if they hit a few shots early, because it's the most difficult thing about playing in the stadiums they play the Final Four in is the shooting background. It's completely different than anything you've ever seen. And it usually plays havoc with shooters. If Loyola hits their shots early, look out. They are absolutely capable of winning the day. They are absolutely capable of winning the tournament. And it would be one of the – we had Mike Greenberg of ESPN on Friday. He made the point that in team sports, you know, since going all the way back to the U.S. Olympic hockey team, this would be an upset along those lines. And you know, it probably would be. And it's definitely something that they're capable of doing. So it should be a great day today.
It should be. And, of course, you're going to be out. And tell everybody where you're going to be.
Quinault Beach Resort Casino, John, and beautiful Ocean Shores. We're having a party, a viewing party, giving away overnight stays, things like that, starting at 3 o'clock. We hope to see everyone out here.
Okay, that'll be a great way to spend this Easter weekend and go see the Groz today. And, of course, listen to them at 12 on Bob Groz and Tom, 12 to 3 weekdays. Groz, enjoy this weekend.
Thanks, John.
That's Dave Grosby, and, of course, that's 12 to 3, Bob and Groz, each weekday. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Tara in Mercer Island. Hi, Tara. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Very good. Very good.
That's good. Given the moves that both the 49ers and the Rams have made, where do you see the Seahawks standing?
I'd say right now second place, because you have to give the Rams the edge. They won the division last year. They've gotten better on defense, particularly with Ndamukong Suh, the re-signing, or at least on a franchise tag, a LaMarcus Joyner, getting Aqib Talib, and also getting Marcus Peters. And so you add those three guys on defense, that means now they're going to be formidable on defense. You know how good they're going to be on offense. You know, in San Francisco, they still have a lot of building to do. You know, they have to still have more work on the offensive line. You know, certainly they got the quarterback. Do they have the right running back? That's in question. You know, I think they feel good about Jerick McKinnon. But remember, he wasn't a starter in Minnesota. He did some good things. But I'd say right now, if you look at the division, it's Rams 1, Seattle 2, San Fran 3, and Arizona 4.
Yeah, I see it the same way as you do. My question marks come from the Rams' offense. Yes, Jared Goff had a good year, but I want to see if he can keep it up. Like, I feel like he still needs a lot of help.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. But the thing is, he does have help. I mean, the only loss they have was Sammy Watkins, and he was more of a luxury. They were able to talk Tavon Austin into taking a 60% pay cut down to $5 million on a one-year deal. That helped. He also were able to do some things so that, you know, you got Cooper Kupp now developing as a wide receiver. I mean, and they have Todd Gurley. Their offensive line's been able to stay intact. So they've kept the same team. And, of course, they may not be able to say that too long, as we talked to Gary Klein about that from the LA Times. But right now, they're pretty formidable.
Yeah. And for the Seahawks, I heard John Schneider interviewed. And mm-hmm. I think he used the word retooling, and I would agree with that. And when Pete and John first came in, that's where the team was, like retooling. And I think that Pete Carroll and John Schneider are one of the best two in the business to do that. So I think the Seahawks could be pretty good this year, too.
No, I agree. I think, you know, people are probably overly critical right now because, I mean, you see more losses than gains. But again, this is still in the beginning stages. I mean, again, they still have more moves to make. They have a draft coming up. You know, they still have assets they can try to move around. So, yeah, it's too early to be overly critical. And I think that you just have to stay and, you know, trust their success because they have the track record and they know exactly what they're trying to do.
Yeah. Thank you for taking my call.
Hey, Tara, thank you very much, and have a great Easter. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Irish Mankey. Irish Mankey, how are you?
Well, hello, Mr. Clayton. Such a great day to talk to you, Easter weekend and all.
Mm-hmm.
And how about those Irish lassies?
That was something last night. That was pretty impressive.
Playing for the national championship. And you, Mr. Clayton, I think you're going to be looking at Monday morning headlines reading Irish girls win national championship.
Well, they won the game. They beat the number one. I mean, that's something that is rarely said. I guess it was said last year with a little bit of a buzzer beater. But, man, that's hard to beat that UConn team because that's been an absolute dynasty.
Oh, surpassing UCLA, Mr. Clayton.
Mm-hmm.
Just the statistics of it all, you know. I don't know if anybody or anything could ever replace John Wooden's UCLA legend, but, you know.
No.
Statistically, UConn did. Mr. Clayton, how about Bleacher Report and their current draft deal? Do you like this lineup? Mayfield to the Browns, Donato to the Giants, Rosen to the Jets, Browns get Chubb, Broncos go Lamar Jackson, Colts get Barkley, Bears, the Bears get Quentin Nelson, the Bills, Josh Allen, now the Seahawks going for Isaiah Wynn out of Georgia.
For who?
And Dallas Cowboys next go McClinchy. You like that idea?
Yeah, see, that's all skewed up because, I mean, number one's going to be Sam Darnold. He's going to go to the Cleveland Browns.
Well, okay, I thought so too, but, just Bleacher Report. I love to read all these guys' wish lists, you know.
Right.
But it's all good. So, Mr. Clayton, what in the world? You know, this is a special weekend.
It is.
It is indeed. It is indeed. And what better way to show that than today? Those Loyola kids are going to win. You already have the Notre Dame girls win. I'm looking at this thing being all Irish, Mr. Clayton, so to speak.
Yeah, you figure that's not going to go that way. I mean,
well,
it's not.
Mr. Clayton. I don't know.
I mean, I can see maybe the Irish on the basketball court being able to do it, but I think Cinderella's going to lose the slipper today.
No, Mr. Clayton, Cinderella is not going to lose, but that's okay. You're forgetting the weekend, and that is a special, special weekend.
Yeah, it is. I hope you get a chance to enjoy
Clayton.
It. This should be fun.
What is in the Clayton Manor household, the favorite dish on this blessed holiday?
Hard to tell. I'm just going to make sure that I get something good for the wife. That's going to be the key.
And how will you spoil Mrs. Clayton?
I hope I get her some good scallops dish? And maybe some shrimp.
What?
That'll be the goal. Hey, Irish, got to run.
Mr. Clayton, set us all going.
Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Mike in Florida. Hey, Mike.
Hey, John. How are you this weekend?
Doing well. How about you?
Doing well. John, listen, I want to touch base with you regarding, I guess it's the release. I know we traded Michael Bennett. But it seems like a lot of guys, when they get an opportunity to take pot shots at Russell Wilson when they leave, and I'm talking in regards to the Marshall, we need more Marshawn Lynch's and not Russell Wilson. I can't say I disagree with the statement, but more or less wonder why it seems like Russell Wilson falls under the sword all the time when these guys have a fit or leave town or whatever the case may be. And kind of wonder what your thought process is on why he's always the one that kind of gets the, I guess, the blunt of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a criticism of his play. I guess what it is, and it's not even a total criticism, what it comes down to is that, you know, this is a team that has a lot of alpha males, or at least had. It still has a lot of alpha males, but it had a lot more alpha males. And because of that, Russell's a little bit different. You know, he's more positive. I mean, he's not going to be outspoken. I mean, he's going to, say nothing but positive things and be, when game's over, he's just going to put it behind him because he's more worried about the next game. where you've got more things involved with Michael Bennett and Richard Sherman and all that. And like, for example, the statement that he made about Russell Wilson, because if you want to say the way that Russell lives his lifestyle, I mean, it's very good and it's very positive, it's very religious. And it's not that Michael Bennett's saying not to be religious, but he says sometimes you need more, I guess you could say, not villains, but more different people to be able to put together a swagger. And that's why he's saying the Marshawn Lynches, and maybe things were different after Marshawn Lynch. I mean, clearly the running game for 2 years has been different without Marshawn. And really in the last year of his Seahawk career was a little bit different, because you can see he was wearing down and wasn't as effective. But no, what Michael was really saying is that, this team has pretty much had the personality of defense, and now it's a little bit of a turnaround, and because it's going to have to rely on offense. And so I think it's more not criticizing Russell, but more pointing to the reality that sometimes you don't have to be all good. You might need a little bit of evil.
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess, so transitioning off that thought, since Trevon Boykin, obviously unfortunate circumstance with him, and he kind of figures out his own troubles, do you think the likelihood of us drafting a quarterback in this draft, do you think that's highly likely, needing that we need some sort of a backup?
No, I think it's highly unlikely, because, I mean, you think about the reality. This team has needs, and they only have one pick in the first 2 days of the draft. They have three picks in the fifth round, none in the sixth, and three in the seventh. So that's four in the first five rounds. They don't have the luxury of trying to do something at quarterback. I mean, they can't obviously do it in the first round. That'd be silly, because you got Russell Wilson, and those picks in the third either got to be moved from moving up or whatever. So no, I think that in the end, it's like they've got to sign a quarterback, not draft a quarterback.
What would you bet the farm that they move out of the first round again this year to collect picks?
I wouldn't bet the farm, because I still think there's a good enough player at 18. There might be a consideration, but I'd say there's probably an 80% chance that they'll try to move down. Now, the only thing that would change that, if they get some kind of a Earl Thomas trade, but again, I think they understand that Earl Thomas would serve this team better to have Earl on this team than not on this team.
Yeah, makes sense. Well, listen, John, thank you for all that you do out there in Seattle. I really appreciate it. And happy Easter.
Hey, thank
you,
Mike. Have a great Easter weekend. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Janet in Buckley. Hey, Janet.
Hey, Professor. We talked about Geno Smith and Sanchez. Mark Sanchez.
Mark Sanchez, yeah.
Right. Being a backup quarterback. What do you think about Johnny Manziel?
No, no way. They need somebody that's responsible. No, they need somebody that kind of gets it. I still don't think that he gets it. I mean, he's still thinking NFL teams are going to take a chance on him. Remember, he's been out of it for so long, and when he was in it, he didn't pick things up. I mean, he needs to go to Canada, play for the Canadian Football League for 2 years, and then try to make it back. I mean, because, again, there's too many unknowns that he has to resolve. And if this team has to resolve on unknowns, it's a waste of time.
Mm, okay. So our choice in, hopefully not Geno Smith, Mark Sanchez, or Austin
Mark Sanchez,
Davis.
Austin Davis. There's still a few more that are out there. You can go the older route. I mean, you've got Anderson, who, of course, he got his family in Mill Creek. He's there. I mean, you got Matt Moore, who's a little bit older, but he's one of the better backup quarterbacks. There's still options. It's just a matter of figuring out the right option. I don't see it in the draft. Again, I don't think they have the luxury to be able to draft one, but I can definitely see some things going as far as, something on the signing front.
Okay, well, thanks for your take on that. Happy Easter.
Okay, hey, Janet, thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Greg in Seattle. Hey, Greg.
Hey, good morning, John. How you doing?
Good morning. Good.
Hey, well, first off, I bet you're glad to be hanging out in your own hallway instead of a week of hanging out and chasing people down in hotel hallways.
Exactly. Yeah, because it's not as if I was able to make it outside and enjoy some of that weather that was down there, that 80-degree weather. It's because, again, it's all pretty intense. You got to try to get the stuff first, and once you get the stuff, then you feel good about that. But it's also good to get back home.
Oh, yeah, the beat on the street. Hey, yes. John. Well, listen, I wanted to ask you, talk to you about for a couple minutes for about the new rules of the NFL. I'm really puzzled. You know, it's kind of shocking that, well, not shocking, but with the catch rule, it's not so shocking. I understand, you know, there's been a lot of speculation about what is a catch, what isn't a catch, and I guess they had to just nail it down, and we'll see how it goes. But I think it'll be, you know, interesting for the receivers and the quarterback. You know, I wonder how that will affect them, and, you know, wondering what you think about that first rule.
Well, the first rule, I mean, it's cleaner, but I don't know if it's totally clean because, you know, the language that they used pretty much addressed the mistakes from the last couple of years. You know, they wanted a football move, and they start to say, okay, so if you're Jesse James and you're reaching the football out, that's a football move. If you're Dez Bryant, you take a third step, that's a football move. You know, I do like the fact they have eliminated the ground causing an incompletion, so now we don't have to worry about survive the ground. But if the wording isn't right for the the choices that they have, you know, for new things that emerge, then there's going to be confusion. That's why, again, I think you lean toward just making the catch and allowing the catch as opposed to having all these complicated things in there that could eliminate the catch. That's why I thought ball in hand, feet on ground, and then you stop. But they wanted to put the football move in there, and that's the one that I think still causes confusion.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the players react to the new rule. The second one, obviously, is the the head down rule. No more head down. That rule is just, I don't understand how that rule is going to even play out. I mean, with the running back and situation and tight end and whoever else is carrying the ball. You know, you look at how players have run the ball in the last, you know, 30, 40 years, and it's always with your head down, especially the running back. And I just,
right,
I'm frustrated because it's going to change the game and it's going to slow down the game. And you know, honestly, John, I think the players are going to hate it. I think they're going to protest it. And I have I don't know. Maybe I'm over exaggerating this, but I mean, could you see down the line of this year or at the end of this upcoming year, maybe the players getting together and saying, hey, we don't want this, and maybe striking or talking about
it? No, they'll if they're going to do anything as far as a strike, it will be done, you know, around the time that they do the CBA, because you're going to lose too much money. And the one thing you don't want to do, particularly when you have limited leverage, is lose money. So I don't see that happening whatsoever. I mean, certainly what you would have to think is what's going to go is that they'll, once they get to 2020, that's when the negotiations begin, and they have to make preparations for that. But they can make complaints. They can try to, you know, raise as much of a stink as they can. But in the end, they just have to kind of follow the rules that are there.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, but don't you think it's interesting though, John, that you know, this came out, you know, the new rules, and you know, now we're having talks about a new league, and you know, besides the NFL, how do you think that will, you know, these new rules will affect maybe the play of the league and maybe, you know,
well, I think the helmet rule is going to slow down the game.
Yeah, it will, and you know, we'll see about what this new league that's coming out. You know, if that maybe they'll play harder.
Yeah, if you're talking about the Alliance is actually trying to align itself so it can be the developmental league for the National Football League, and we got that from Bill Polian, you know, who's, you know, kind of getting the involvement with that, and he explained, you know, they're trying to tie in to the National Football League, not be against.
Okay, yeah, that's true. Well, I was thinking about more about the Vince McMahon.
Yeah, that has no chance.
I don't think so.
I mean,
either.
Let's be honest.
Hey,
I don't see it.
I'm just curious, who are you rooting for, and who do you want to win in the Final Four today, John?
I mean, I'm neutral right now. Yeah, I still like excellence, so I guess if that's the case, you know, Villanova, I think, has been pretty much the best this year, so I'd probably lean toward them. Yeah, it'd be nice if Loyola was able to do something, but again, I just think that, you know, there's a history there. They've already defeated history, but again, once you get into the Final Four, it's hard for that low of a seed to be able to advance. And again, it's like Dave Grosby brought up the great point that we have to remind ourselves about all the time, is that, they're shooting now. They're not shooting in arenas. They're shooting in stadiums. And again, that's a different backdrop when you're all of a sudden, you've got a backdrop that's just so vast that it's so different from anything you're going. You know, the better the team, the better the players. I think that's where the advantage goes.
Yeah, agreed. I still am always going to root for the underdog, though. I wonder how Loyola will handle the pressure of all the media today and for the next few days. It's going to be interesting. I'm rooting for whoever comes out of that side of the, either Michigan or Loyola. I want them to win it all. And it'll be an exciting day, John. So thanks for your
time. It'll be good.
And, have a great day.
Hey, thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710. ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to J-E-T. Jet.
Dr. John, how are you doing today?
Doing well. How about you?
Well, first I'd just like to start off by wishing you and Mrs. C a happy Easter, and I hope you guys get to spend some quality time together. And welcome back to be able to spend it in town. That's got to be nice.
Oh, it's good to be back.
Yeah, I bet. Bunch of non sequiturs today. First off, you want to make football safer? I had a professor, economics professor in college, basically said, you want to make driving safer? Put a pike in the driving steering wheel, and it can shoot out if you get in an accident. You can't believe, screw the seatbelts. You can't believe how safe people will drive if they realize they're going to get stuck with a pike coming out of them if they get an accident. That's the same thing with football. They weaponize the helmet when they put the face mask on it. They really want to be serious about the safety. Let them play without a face mask. That'll change the complexion of the game.
I kind of get the feeling you're like me. You're not in favor of the helmet rule.
No.
Now.
No. At some point, you've got to come to grips that it's a violent sport. You can only change so much of it, and I really can't stand what they've done already. And I'm sorry if there are health issues, but there's an assumption of risk. Like it or not, there is. Much like with boxers. It's ugly. It's grisly. You don't want it. Don't do it. But if you're going to do it, that's the nature of the sport. I'm sorry. You try to make the helmet a little safer, but you've weaponized it. It's going to be tough to unweaponize it at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that they're biting off more than they can chew on this one because, and it's funny because they kept on putting too much verbiage, even a little bit now with the new rule change on the catch, but they're trying to be real simple on this one, and that's where I think they can get themselves in trouble because what you're talking about is, okay, lower the helmet and contact penalty. It's like, please, that's just not right.
And this game is just so difficult to officiate to begin with, they just continue to make it more and more difficult. It's ridiculous. So that's point one. Point two, in thinking about the quarterbacks going into this draft, and I guess perhaps nitpicking or trying to maybe find some flaws with Sam Darnold, I was thinking back, I had a conversation with one of my buddies, we were saying, geez, how many real good, successful quarterbacks from USC can you come up with? And I guess one of the better ones you can come up with, I guess, is Carson Palmer. Boy, does he ever actually won. But go back 20, 30 years. I mean, yeah, they've got a lot of great athletes that come out of the program, a lot of incredible running backs, linebackers, defensive linemen, wide receivers. How many quality quarterbacks have come out of USC? And I guess you got to kind of scratch your head and say, why?
Mm-hmm. That's a fair point.
So I don't know
but
if...
I just think this one's going to be good. I like this one.
I'm inclined to agree with you, but it's just kind of a random thought, and it's just kind of odd. You wouldn't really think that unless you sit back and start thinking about how all the mediocre to bad quarterbacks USC has produced. It's odd.
Well, and the thought is that you're in such a star environment that you kind of get lost in this stardom and you lose your way a little bit. I mean, that seems to be because, you know, that's scouts have been noting that for years. It's like, when was the last real good one? And probably Mark Sanchez to a minor degree, but the last real solid one was, you know, clearly Carson Palmer. And you have to look to go back because, you know, you feel like you're a star. And maybe you're not really a star. And that's where I think you get yourself in trouble.
Yeah. I also kind of wonder if you're more of a product of the system and all the quality that's around you. I don't know. Interesting thought, though. Last thing, regarding the Seahawks, and, you know, this next year or two, I really think, is going to define Pete Carroll and Schneider's legacy here in Seattle. Reason being is that, okay, yeah, right. They had some really great drafts their first 2 years. Coincidence? Pete Carroll just came out of coaching USC for a decade and was involved in recruiting all along. And the first 2 years out, he's able to spot guys in the third, fourth, fifth round and pick up guys like Sherman, you know, Baldwin, guys that he's recruited, guys that he's seen. And they get these guys way back in the draft. But you look at their draft history after Pete Carroll kind of worked his way through the recruiting process after 3, 4, 5 years into the drafting process, their drafts really have not been very good the last 5 years. And so you got to scratch your head and say, why? Okay, so let's see what Carroll and Schneider are able to do to reload this program. And if they are able to do that, then I think that's a successful legacy, and I think they're for real. If not, then I think Pete was basically a product of his situation, and I think that, to some extent, takes a little bit away from his legacy.
Yeah, you can't take away the legacy that's already there. You just have to see, because sometimes it is. Remember, the difference is in the early days, you have a chance to draft higher in the draft. You're drafting, you know, you're not in that bottom group. You're not down there, because really, when you look at it, most teams like today, they're going to have 16 to 18 players listed as first-round picks under their system. And so now you're taking second-round picks, and, you know, they're not going to have the chances of maybe going to the Pro Bowl like that. But, you know, this team still has been successful. I mean, they go to the third round of the draft to get Shaquille Griffin. You know, the second round, they get Frank Clark. I mean, they're still able to do it, you know, but like anything else, there's still going to be mistakes, and mistakes have been made.
Yeah, but I will note that it wasn't like they were picking in the top 10 when Carroll and Schneider came in. I mean, the kind
of... Well, they had, Russell Okung and Earl Thomas were top 10 picks.
True.
Remember, those are the two guys that they started it out. They were top 10 picks.
Right. And quite frankly, Okung was one of the weirder moves that they've made over the years.
Yeah, well, again, sometimes you can't keep them everything together. And, hey, you know from the Jets, you watched as the cap kept on getting tighter how many players they had to shed.
Well, you're the one that sold me on this years ago, besmirching Tannenbaum when he was trading all those draft picks and, you know, coming up with good drafts. And, like, you know, and drafting Revis in the first round, Harris in the second round, but there was really nothing behind them. And it catches up to you because, as you notice now, like with the Jets, but the Seahawks have the similar problem, is that you don't have any depth in your roster.
Well, you know, well, ironically, though, I thought and still do believe that last year's Seahawk team was the second deepest they had. I know Pete Carroll agrees. They had depth. What happened, though, is that they had injuries, and the injuries affected so many things. And that's not an excuse. And then, of course, you know, some key guys didn't go through. They pay $8 million for a guard, and, you know, he doesn't come through. They try to go younger and at a kicker, didn't work out, and they paid a price. The margin of victory last year was just a little bit tighter, and they didn't respond to the margin of victory. Still, if they get the 5 field goals by Blair Wilson or Blair Walsh in the home game, you know, now they're 12 and 4. So, hey, that's just a byproduct of it. But, again, at some point, you start running out, and the time started running out for this team.
Yeah, and it happens. You just got to reload, and we'll see what they're able to do. But it's too bad.
Okay. Hey, Jet, have a great Easter.
Hey, thanks. You too, John. Take care.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Aaron Goldsmith talking Mariners coming up next. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.